Welcome back to Sunday Nights to an old friend, Father Sean McDonough. One of our early guests on Sunday Night with the publication back in the early 1980s of his book, To Care for the Earth, A Priest's Understanding of Environmental Responsibility in the Days When It Was Not on the Agenda. You return to us, Sean, as one of those who've contributed perhaps to the most recent papal encyclical, Laudate Si, on caring for the earth. It's great to have you back with us.
Thank you very much, John, and I'm delighted to be back here. As you said, I think we had our first interview 30 years ago. I think somebody must have stolen some of my time because it doesn't seem like 30 years ago.
We were mere boys.
Yeah, that's right.
Just remind us of your journey, because you didn't start out as an environmentally conscious priest. You were a missionary priest in the Philippines.
I was a missionary priest, and my big interest after the Second Vatican Council as a missionary was to try to understand the culture and the symbols used by people so that our faith could be expressed in their cultural tradition. So I went to Mindanao. I spent a year studying the language of Cebuano and the culture. And then I began to work in a parish there. Now, it was a really pleasant time. It was before the Marcos dictatorship. So I enjoyed very much those 2 years. But then in 1971, Mr. Marcos declared martial law. And people were being put in jail for having ideas that people said were communist ideals. So I got very much involved in the whole area of social justice, because the Mindanao Church had come back from Vatican II to set up that they would be particularly concerned about social justice. There were the Vatican II itself, but also Pope Paul VI's encyclical Progressio Populorum, the progress of people. So we worked with that church. Now, it was quite difficult because, as I say, you know, they're thinking of putting Marcos into a hero's grave. I mean, the Marcos dictatorship destroyed the lives of at least 100,000 people. I mean, I have friends of mine that were put in jail, teachers who were teaching maths, but actually were also teaching young women how to think. They were being put in jail for that.
You first encountered the link between environmentalism and social justice in that circumstance, when you saw the damage that large-scale logging and other things were doing to the environment
of those
people.
But that was about 8 years later, John. I went and I studied anthropology and linguistics in Washington, D.C., and I came back and I was asked to teach in a university, in a secular university, in a Muslim area, because we were involved, the Columbans, in Christian-Muslim dialogue. So I taught there for about 4 years, and then 1978... one of my students was doing her master's degree, an ethnography on this tribal group that I had heard of, the Tiboli. So I went down with her to help her with the linguistics of it. And there, of course, like it was just like being hit right in the face. I just saw on one side the wonder and beauty of the tropical rainforest. I didn't know much about it. I wouldn't have known much about the species. But on the other side, areas that had been clear felled for 10, 20 years, topsoil is gone, just like almost a moonscape. And then I said to myself, this has to be wrong. But then I looked back at Catholic social teaching and there's nothing there. So that was the beginning of my journey. And I was angry and I was upset. I was depressed. Eventually, I asked my superior, could I go and work there? Now, it was in a different area. The Passionist priests were running that particular area. So I had to get permission to go and work down there. And just I set myself as a task to try to understand this and to the best of my ability to communicate it to the people there and to the Catholic Church at large. So, you know, this almost 40-year journey did end up in a way in Laudato Si. If you had asked me the last time I was here 4 years ago, would I expect to see something of the quality of Laudato Si in the leadership of the Catholic Church, I would have said, I'll be dead before that happens.
What leads you to make the link between environment and social justice so strongly that you felt, this I need to commit a large part of my intellectual and spiritual discipline to? And it results in a book called To Care for the Earth.
A Call to a New Theology.
Which came a long time before it was taken seriously elsewhere.
Absolutely, yes. Two things happened to me which were very gracious, in the sense that, okay, I saw what was happening and it did. You know, I had to say, this is awful. You know, the destruction of God's creation. I come from Ireland. My father was a policeman, but he was really a peasant at heart. He just loved the land. We grew all our own food. he had an interest in protecting and preserving land. And so that was in my culture genes, but it wasn't in my theological genes, as it were. But yes, I kind of said, I'm going to have to try and find some basis for this. And I was very lucky to come in contact with a man that you've probably heard of, Thomas Berry. I was heading home to Ireland and I had a relative who was sick in the United States. And I was going through New York and I heard about Tom. So we made an agreement to meet. And he told me he could meet me for about an hour. I arrived maybe 9:30 on that particular morning. By 11:30, we were still talking. And I said to Tom, I thought it was only an hour. He said, well, look, forget about that. Let's go over and have a meal together. So towards the afternoon, talking about my concerns and where he was at that time, he was a very interesting man. I said, Tom, I'd love to spend a week with you. And Tom said, waste of my time and waste of yours. So I said, what do you mean? At least 4.5 months. Now, this was before Gmail or anything going on. I had to send a telegram back to my superior in Cagayan de Oro in Mindanao, Philippines, saying, do you mind if I take 4 months off because I want to study with this extraordinary man? Now, that was really huge because he had begun to take on board these sort of as a total lone voice.
He was a pioneer in what we these days call environmental theology. You've spent much of the last 30 years now being a disciple and an apostle, really, in your own right, on the whole area of environmental theology. We've seen in the last 10 years particularly an acceleration of this. We've seen churches move from a position where environmentalists were regarded as pagans and nature worshippers to where the Pope has come to a position saying, no, the environment is central to our concept of creation. That's a very interesting and relatively rapid journey.
Oh, very rapid journey. If you want me to contextualise it in the Catholic Church, in 2004, the Catholic Church published the Compendium of the Social Teachings of the Church. Chapter 10 was on safeguarding creation. It had 15 pages. I think chapter 6 was on work, human work. It had 26 pages. So in that 16 pages, there was one half paragraph on climate change, one half paragraph on biodiversity destruction, and 9 paragraphs on biotechnology. So we have come in 11 years to an extraordinary change. And the first change was, now it was signalled a little bit by Pope John Paul himself, but Pope John Paul or Pope Benedict never got clear two very important things. The magnitude of the ecological crisis. It's not just happening in the rainforests of Southeast Asia that have gone. It's happening right around the planet. Just look at climate change. We've changed the chemistry of the air. That's a global reality. The implications of it are very tragic. We who have benefited from fossil fuel in our standards of living over the last 4 or 5 generations, but who's paying the cost of it? The people of Tacloban with that awful storm 3 years ago. I've come here from Fiji, and that storm last year, the cyclone Winston, destroyed the lives of 150,000 people. So it's now very much at the centre. But the Catholic Church was very slow to come on board. I did a lot more work with the World Council of Churches. We brought out, the World Council of Churches brought out an excellent document on climate change called Sign of Pearl, Test of Faith in 1993. So this is a huge change. So the first thing, and the other change is the way Francis does being Pope. Popes, the modern social teachings come from 1891, Leo XIII, Rerum Novarum, called New Things. It was an attack, a direct attack on liberal capitalism, that the markets rule everything. But all of the encyclicals on that, and there's about 10 of them, popes that quote the scripture, they maybe quote some of the fathers like Augustine or Ambrose, they might quote Aquinas, and then they quote prior popes and themselves. What does Francis do? He quotes 21 bishops' conference, including the conference of the Australian bishops. So he's setting the context. I am a bishop of Rome, but I depend on the church to tell me what's going on. And the most wonderful thing is, after the voice of Francis, which is very strong, and he took his name because of his connectedness with the poor, that extraordinary experience with the leper, and also his connectedness with all creation, that he said the best way to understand creation is that part of the family. The next chap he talks about is the Orthodox Patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew. And he's the one who said, if you just do deforestation, if you destroy biodiversity, if you create problems, these are sins. Now, that is a huge issue, because every place I talk now, I said, we have to stop there. Because as Catholics or Christians, we do not believe that. We were brought up to believe the Ten Commandments. You worship God, you're careful in your relationship with God, and you are also careful in your relationship with other human beings, particularly those on the margins. But now you're bringing in a new moral dimension. It says, I think, number 43, Christians realize that their duty towards nature and the Creator are an essential part of their faith. Now, that is a blank. That has to be filled in by good education and teaching across the board.
It's encouraging, singularly encouraging, that blank page is now open.
That's right.
And you've had a part in that. You've had a significant part in that, because your seminal book, way back then, To Care for the Earth, has been one of those documents that's filtered its way around and even clearly filtered itself into the courts of the papacy. Just tell us how you got approached with regards to Laudato Si, because I do understand that you've had some contribution to this encyclical.
Well, I'd like to put the offside first. I mean, I've written, I think, 13 books over those years. For example, the Vatican took a very strong position, pro-civilian nuclear power. People like myself were called naive idealists. Okay, they had not taken a position on climate change. They had taken positions on biotechnology. They had very little positions on biodiversity. So that's the world that I was coming out of, and wasn't invited to many conferences in the Vatican because I was known publicly to be critical. So in October of 2013, I get a phone call from the president of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, Cardinal Turkson, to ask me, would I write a document? It's called the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace because it had very little connect with the environment. So would I write a document that would fill in that gap for them, which I proceeded to do. And I had it finished by the end of January 2014. So I had quite a number of meetings with his group. And then that whole issue morphed into what became the sources for Laudato Si.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio. Our guest is Father Sean McDonough. Recently, a contributor, perhaps, to the thinking of the papacy on the environmental encyclical Laudato Si. Let's talk about the way in which you helped contribute to the thinking that led us to Laudato Si, this latest papal encyclical. Mm. What are the new markers it sets down, things that you think are a unique contribution to thinking in this area?
Well, you have to critique it with what went before, and you'd have to say of the Catholic Church, and I would know almost as much as anyone else because I've been at this for almost 40 years, is that we were in kinder in terms of a church. We had very little to offer, and in this one document we've gone at least postmasters and maybe up near a PhD. One of the most insightful things, that don't forget that the subtitle of my book, To Care for the Earth, was A Call to a New Theology. This document is exactly that, a call to a new theology. And the place it does it most is in our relationship to other species. Traditionally, and particularly since the beginning of the scientific revolution, where we, in a sense, secularized all of nature, we dealt with nature in terms of an I-it relationship. And we fundamentally saw nature as there to meet man's, whatever man's demands were. And we didn't see any limits to those. So he comes up with a real issue of morals. He articulates it. He gets Bartholomew, the Patriarch of Constantinople, to do that. But then he talks about every species has intrinsic value over and above its usefulness to us. Now, that is new teaching in the Catholic Church. It's asking for a new spirituality. We can no longer relate to the world around us as if it's not there, for example.
I mean, or as if it's ours to exploit.
Or it's ours to exploit. But you take some of the first people here in that dreamland world, they had song lines. Songlines were good descriptions, intimate relationship with the natural world that actually perdured for thousands of years. And people are beginning to find that, for example, of tribes that are up in northwest Australia, knowing what actually happened with the Great Barrier Reef 11,000 years ago. So he's asking for a new intimacy with actual creation. Now, that means a spiritual life that is led, as we often did, of leaving the world, the fuga mundi in Latin, getting rid of the world. That is totally anathema to his new understanding of how we must relate to God's creation.
So there are two quite profound shifts here. The one, the connection with the world is one thing, but the relationship between this world and the next,
that's right,
is the other thing. That second thing, though a bit esoteric, is in some ways more foundationally significant in the history of theology.
Oh, it is very much, because in actual fact, you see, one of the things that the document doesn't say, it talks about St. Francis. And as I say, Francis highlighted three areas: care for the poor, particularly that the leper on the margins of society, care for the earth, talking to the birds, part of the familial reality. But in the second millennium, the church did not follow up on that. And for very, very awful reasons. People forget that the most traumatic event in European history of the last 2,000 years was the Black Death. It happened over a period of about 10 years. It came in from southern Italy, worked its way through Europe, right over. The last account we have is a town in Ireland called Drogheda, where word came down that all the Franciscans were dead. So what that did to European history was said, look, we better start move our gaze from the world itself to preparing for the next world. So now you have a spirituality of the next world, mortification, concern of making your soul, the good death. So the natural world loses all meaning. It has no meaning. So you can do anything you want to with it. And then when we, in a sense, begin to understand it technically with the scientific revolution, we have taken all spirit out of it. So it's a machine and we can use it for ourselves. So that has been, and actually that perdured in all of the Christian churches. It was part of the Reformation. The world is not good. Humans are not good either. They're maybe not the worst in the world, but they're not good.
And then part of the evangelical revival
By the way, saying in the book of Revelation, it's all about the future. It's all about getting to
the
heaven.
The next world, yes.
So, so this document turns all of that on its head and said this, no. And of course it should have. We believe in an incarnational religion. And I'll give you an example myself. I went to the seminary, you know, just as the Vatican Council was starting, and the prayer at Mass for Advent. Now, when you're celebrating the wonder of the divine becoming part of created order, what did you pray? You prayed, "Lord, teach us to despise the things of earth and to love the things of heaven." So you can see how deep rooted that anti-world, anti-earth, misogynist too, anti-women. So that was your spirituality, all focused on the future in heaven. A total rejection of incarnation.
So Francis is coherent in producing a pretty foundational revolution. And here's perhaps an aside, he seems to be doing it in a way which does not affront doctrine. That is, he's not taking issues on head on. No. He's basically saying, look, it's a matter of attitude.
It is. And now, to be fair, he also would have learned. I mean, people ask me who wrote the document. And I'm absolutely sure he wrote the document, because he says, you're believing a world of filth and desolation. I wouldn't write that sort of language. He writes it. But he had two things. Like, he was Bishop of Buenos Aires, and it was known of him he was the Bishop of the slums. He asked people why they were poor. Most of us, from politicians, economists down, tell people why they're poor, and we have the solutions to them. The second thing he had on his side, and this was very slow, because I remember difficulties in my own society as Colombians. People from Latin America have been very big on social analysis, Marxist analysis of society, and liberation theology, while we in the Philippines were very much there, but we were talking about the destruction of the earth as well. But he was... There was a famous meeting in Latin America in 2007 called Aparecida. It was the bishops of Latin America, Central America and the Caribbean. And at this time, the bishops from the Amazon had done wonderful work on what's happening to the biodiversity and begun to see it in theological terms. He was the chief editor of that. Because I know in drafts of the document, some of that at one stage was being pushed to the side. Catholicism doesn't handle biodiversity, which I think is awful. We're supposed to be pro-life, but it came back in spades. And there's more of it than there is on greenhouse gases or on climate change. So that itself, again, is an open space for a wonderful engagement of the church on the area of spirituality.
You began as a missionary priest. Do you see also in Francis, in documents like Laudato Si, the hint of a new missiology, that he is saying the church needs to reconnect foundationally with the world? It can no longer be removed from the world.
Oh, absolutely, John. Absolutely. And also an understanding. Don't forget he's the first non-European pope since the 800s. So, like, all he's also saying is that the culture and the place of all of these bishops' conferences, that's the shape of Christianity into the future. It's not the Bishop of Rome, you know, sending out documents that this is what you have to believe here, this is what you have to believe. In actual fact, we need to get in touch with our culture, we need to get in touch with the biodiversity, we need to get in touch with local areas so we can celebrate our Christianity in our local area. And that is, of course, a new missiology. That's a new way of envisaging how we share the Christian message with each other in the context of where life is in particular culture, Australia, what have you, you know.
Looking to the future, are you more optimistic now than you were? You went through a period there where you must have felt this was a long road and it could be pretty lonely.
Well, I did. Now, but once I'd finished with Thomas Berry in the 4 months, and Thomas, he didn't let me look at an ecological book for about a month and a half. I was reading The People Who Shaped Modern Europe, The People of the Scientific Era. And in that sense, once I got a handle on it, I knew where it had come from. But I also knew myself, to talk in vocational terms, that I felt that my life was going to be lived out trying to make this message, this call to a new theology, clear in my own mind and clear in the minds of people I would share it with. And in a sense, that's what I did. But if you had asked me, would this document have appeared in my lifetime? I would have said 5 years ago, absolute nonsense. The other good thing that we have to mention is Paris last year, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. I've been at almost every single one of them. And initially, you had the American presidency was denying it was happening. Difficulty. But last year, you got 195 countries sat down and signed this document. It's not a perfect document. We would hope Marrakesh this week will be much better. But it is the first time that the world has actually come to terms, and it is part of every country. Now, we have differentiated responsibilities. So that also gives me hope that we may be on a trajectory to actually do something serious.
You've got commitments there. A number of countries have yet to sign on the dotted line, even though they've given formal commitment. How do you assess Australia now? You're back here for another visit, and we still seem to have those both within the church and outside the church, within politics and outside politics, who are saying climate's off the agenda. We've got to put economic development in front of climate.
Well, last year, now the document came out in May last year, Laudato Si, and he talks, I think it's 161, he talks about catastrophes taking place even now. Look what happened in Australia in the last year. You have the largest living organism on the planet, 1,400 miles from north of Brisbane right up to New Guinea. 20% of the coral polyps in that reality died last year, the highest ever that they are aware of in the 11,000 years of that. Now, if that's not a catastrophe, I don't know what a catastrophe is. And it's clearly related to the temperature of the waters.
Yet, paradoxically, you had some tourists operations in the short term trying to deny that there was anything serious,
yes,
because they were afraid of the short-term impact on the tourism industry, even though the long-term impact is catastrophic.
Catastrophic. Because I remember in the Philippines, I wrote that section on the oceans. It was part of the Philippine Bishop's Pastor letter, which was published in 1988, What's Happening to Our Beautiful Land, which actually I was helped.
So how do you assess the politics of Australia at the moment in that context?
Well, again, it's short-term. I mean, I remember swimming in extraordinary coral areas and the beauty of it, and then going back 15 years later and you're like in a cemetery. Everything is gone. So, yes, and you're going to have to face the issue of coal. Coal there. Is coal the way forward? We have to do everything to keep carbon out of the air. So how can you be now putting huge amounts of money into spreading coal around the world rather than putting those amounts of money into alternative source of energy? And I think that's one area. I was down in Adelaide there recently again, and people were saying they're going to build a long-term dump for nuclear waste down there from plutonium. The half-life is 11,000 years. You'll still be talking about it as being toxic and radioactive for 200,000 years. You know, now, again, one very interesting thing in the Vatican, they were very strong for civilian nuclear power until Fukushima. Post-Fukushima, they're quiet on it. Because here is the second most technologically adept nation in the world, and this is what happened. Three of the reactors went up. If the six of them had gone up, Tokyo would have been in huge, huge difficulty. So I think things are happening. I actually think that the churches, and I give at the end of my book there on Laudato Si, one thing I'd love to see happening is that the churches would run a three-year synod. And the first part of the synod would be reconnecting ourselves with the natural world. And then we begin to take the issues, for example, energy and climate change. For example, waste. There's 5 trillion pieces of plastic out in the Pacific Ocean. I'm the generation of plastic. I'm 72 years of age. It's a post-World War II phenomenon. And just think of 5 trillion pieces out there. So how will communities, parishes and dioceses handle this? Now, you'll also have in that particular effort changing of our theology, because in chapter 2 of Laudato Si, the Pope goes back and looks at the account of Genesis. And he says very clear, if you think that dominion gives us right to do this, that, he said, that's a misinterpretation of the God. So you will be getting that kind of change. I would also be hoping you'll get great changes in rituals, that we're going to be, in a sense, in fellowship with all of creation. So we'll be bringing in more prayers and more. Do it first year in diocese and parish, have it ecumenical and interreligious, then do it around the country, and then the third one internationally. And I think that would be a wonderful service to our world in a time when it needs it, actually.
You're talking about changing consciousness within the church, theologically and personally. That involves something else as well. It involves some notion of activism. That activism can come by being individually environmentally responsible. But does it mean also the church seeing itself as a social movement, that is a movement that speaks to the wider community about the broader responsibilities we all have for each other, and that only by being a ground-up social movement are we going to influence the policymakers in a democracy?
I would absolutely so, and Laudato Si is very much on that. But it actually is even more than that, because when he comes to talk about the Christian vision, he said, this is what we have got to offer. Everyone else has something to offer also. He doesn't say, look, this encyclical of mine is for bishops. He said it's for everyone. So, yes, and once you begin to make those kind of changes, surely you're asking for a different way of dealing with the earth, but you're also asking for a different economics, that we can't be pushing out troubles into on top of the poor and on top of the earth. So, yes, and that's why I would say a synod would solidify that at parish and local level. I mean, in your particular area where you're living, say you want to do something on reducing your energy or alternative energy. If, you know, half of the people in the street or the village where you are said, well, we'll go into this photovoltaic together, the costs would be less. You'd have a people working together.
You're talking about social activism there, the community level, but you're also talking about political activism too.
Oh, absolutely.
Fighting for policy change.
Absolutely. Well,
and that becomes a bottom-up exercise.
Yeah, there is a huge issue here between coal and the reef, you know. And the reef can't, like we know, for example, if all of the things on Paris were actually all of the commitments that countries have made, if they were all added up at the end of this century, the world would be 4 degrees Celsius warmer than it is today. That would wipe out the whole reef. So we can't really have that. So the church, and he is calling for these extraordinary changes to take place. In a sense, he's one of the first popes to actually do that. But he also is saying the way to do it is not by knocking down the person next door, it's by dialogue and discussion.
Sean McDonough, it's been great to talk to you. We've run out of time, but it's been remarkable that we can sit here today and reflect on a 30-year journey and be amazed at where it has led you and your contribution to it. So from all of the listeners here on Sunday night, thanks for your consistency over many, many years, and it's a real joy to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.